Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about the dumbest gambler maybe in the history of gamblers, at least if he was trying to get away with something. Also, why are the NBA's ratings looking the way that they do right now? Also, got your stories from Thanksgiving. Hopefully they're a hoot. But first, all right, so I had a little interesting weekend on the internet with people during the college football rivalry games, and it taps on something that if you listen to this podcast, you've heard me say before, and maybe you thought I was a little crazy for saying, but I'm going to reiterate it because this thing is ultimately true. I have talked about this with my buddy Spencer. I talked about this with my buddy Joel. I said the same thing that people do not understand and realize when it comes to Alabama football. And that is, this thing has been rolling real tough now for about 11 years, okay? Let Nick Saban go 10-2 in back-to-back years and not make the SEC championship or not make the playoff, and you're going to find out what Alabama football really is, okay? Had all kinds of people hit me up over the weekend. No, they'd never fire Saban. They'd never get rid of him. After everything he's done, as sorry as they were before he got there, they would never move on from Nick Saban. And that makes 100% total sense at 129 of the 130 college football programs. That ain't got nothing to do with nothing when it comes to the University of Alabama. And I mean, I had it over and over and over and over. No, that's ridiculous that Nick Saban would be on the hot seat. It's silly that Nick Saban would be on the hot seat. Did you hear Feinbaum pop up in the last couple days talking about how the dynasty isn't quite over and how, you know, he might want to get this thing going in gear? Have you seen Feinbaum say that? Now, who you think know Alabama better, me or Feinbaum? Because I feel like Feinbaum knows it better than me, yet Feinbaum is saying the exact same thing that I was out here saying.
Feinbaum is the plugged-in guy when it comes to Alabama, I would imagine.
Yes, okay. Now, let me give you a little bit of Alabama football history for you. I did a little more looking this up the other day because I was looking up some Bear Bryant stuff. Now, Bear Bryant had a 6-5 season, I want to say, is either 1968 or 1969, but he's there. And I know what you're hearing. You're like, oh, 6-5. 6-5 is different than the 10-2 I was talking about with Nick Saban. Sort of. 6-5 back in the day meant something a little bit different, and there was some context around Alabama going 6-5. Anyway, Alabama going 6-5, and they was ready to come for Bear Bryant. This was after Bryant won 3 national championships. They were trying to come for Bear Bryant. Now, one thing that Bryant seemed to understand the whole way along was that there was going to be a point where Alabama needed to, alter their recruiting strategy. Kind of needed to start looking at some places that they hadn't necessarily been looking when it came down to getting players. And, of course, you've got the infamous Sam Bam Cunningham game, I believe that is in 1970. And a big part of why Bryant scheduled that, if you believe the reports, was he needed USC to come to Alabama. Well, they came to Birmingham. They didn't play in Tuscaloosa. They needed them to come down and bring them black dudes down there and beat the hell out of Alabama so that Alabama would look around and realize, hey, we need to flip this up. Gabe, I want to say it was by 1973, I want to say it was, but it was in the early to mid portion of the 70s. 1/3 of Alabama's starters were black. Just that fast. Why? Because whatever they got to do to win at Alabama, they are going to do. The standard for winning is completely different at Alabama than it is literally anywhere else, right? They demand it in a completely different way. There is no sentimentality when it comes to winning there because there wasn't sentimentality for Bear Bryant when it came to winning at Alabama. And to take it another level, there was no sentimentality for Jim Crow when it came time to try to win at Alabama. It's just different. Now, of course, after that flipped up, Bryant won another 3 national championships. And the 1 year where it slipped, Bryant right after that retired and then died a month later. Like, we never got to find out what it would be like if Bear Bryant had a couple of 8-win seasons after that second run of success when they went to the Wishbone at Alabama. We didn't ever get to see what it would be for Bear Bryant. I'm telling you right now, Bear Bryant had gone out there, had two of them 8-win seasons. They'd have been looking at it like, hey, the old man is losing it. I don't think the old man's got it. Like, that is what you would have heard at that point. That's what it would have come down to. And now we get to this place with Nick Saban. Alabama lost by one possession to LSU. Alabama lost by one possession to Auburn. I would recommend to Nick Saban that he not do that again next year. And understand this, their defense, like a big part of what happened, I think, with their defense this year was about health, right? Like that was the big thing. I think they had a big problem there with health. But man, Florida James with the data here. Gabe, you ready for this? From 2008 to 2018. Okay, so that's 2008 is really when this Saban run begins. But from 2008 to 2018, ranked first in the country in opposing touchdowns allowed. First in opposing yards allowed. First in opposing yards per play. Third in opposing third down percentage. Fourth in sacks. And led the nation in defensive touchdowns in that time period. This year, tied for 12th in opposing touchdowns allowed. 17th in opposing yards per game. 19th in opposing yards per play. 33rd opposing third down percentage. And 44th in sacks. And I gotta say, 12th in touchdowns allowed. Not bad. 17th in yards per game. Not bad. 19th in yards per play on defense. None of those things are bad. None of those things are good enough at that place. None of them are. None. Right? Because I think a lot of y'all look at Alabama and you look at Saban and you're like, yo, Saban is exceeding what anybody could reasonably expect. See, the tricky word there is reasonable. That's where it gets odd. You're right. He is doing more than anybody could reasonably expect. These people's expectations are not reasonable. That's not how this works. You don't get as good at this as Alabama is by being reasonable. Period. Doesn't happen. That's not what it is. And so I guarantee you this, Nick Saban fully understands, hey man, we got to figure out how exactly it is that we are going to do this. Now, let me show you where this is going to get interesting for Saban. What Saban has been able to pull off has been an incredible run of recruiting, really unlike anything I feel like we've ever seen, right? It's hard for anybody, though, to stay on top in recruiting in that way. We have seen that in college basketball where you had a stretch where Roy Williams was dominating everybody about 10 years ago, and then that guy became John Calipari, and then that guy became Mike Krzyzewski, and now we're seeing that transition where it's been a little more Penny Hardaway. Like, it's not really that one guy that's like that anymore. But at the top levels of recruiting, we see a measure of rotation. That's how it goes. I'm looking at the top 100 for rivals so far this year. You want to ask me how many five-star recruits Alabama has commitments from so far this year?
How many do they usually get before I ask you that?
Between like 3 and 7.
Okay, because usually it seems like Clemson is the king of the five-star.
Well, see, that's what I was about to say. This year has 1 so far. Now, that maybe that might change, right? These things are fluid. But Alabama, as things stand, has 1. How many do you think Clemson has?
I'm saying at least 5.
All right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, including the top 2 recruits in the country.
Yeah, the king of the five-star.
King of the five-star, right? Like, that's what this is. They're not dominating recruiting in the way that they used to dominate recruiting. They're just not. Now, is their recruiting good? Their recruiting is very good. In fact, for Alabama, that is. Alabama's ranked so far in recruiting this year is 4th. 4th. Gabe, 4th is really, really good. And you know what else 4th is? Slipping. That's what 4th is. 4th is slipping. Telling you, get ready for it. And in fact, Gabe, in 2018, Alabama only had the number 7 recruiting class. That means them dudes is going to be juniors next year. Gabe, you know what that sounds like to me? Slipping. Do I sound ridiculous when I say this? Of course I sound ridiculous when I say this. But we are talking about ridiculous people. We are talking about ridiculous people. We are talking about people where Alabama, I'm going through this, had the number 1 or 2 recruiting class basically every year since 2009. And that's what them folks expect every year. Every year they expect this. Like, I think that people are looking at Alabama in the ways that they think that Michigan looks at itself. So you go look at what's going on now with Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. I did a TV show yesterday, and Pablo asked me, is this the year that they fire Jim Harbaugh? And I was like, no, it ain't the year they fire Jim Harbaugh. I'm like, who are they going to hire if they fire Jim Harbaugh? That explanation does not apply at Alabama, right? Where I can look at Alabama and be like, well, you ain't going to get a better coach than Saban. That's not the point. The point for them is this is the standard, and the standard is not being met, and therefore we demand a level of accountability that comes from there. Now, you go look at what's going on at Michigan. Harbaugh's actually done a better job at Michigan than people realize. If Michigan wins a bowl game this year, then it will be the fourth time in 5 years that Michigan has won 10 games. Michigan has been to two major bowls in the 5 years that Harbaugh has been there. And the 2016 season that I love to point to when you talk about just how thin the margins are in college football and trying to get this done, Michigan that year lost three games by a combined 5 points. Went to overtime with Ohio State, lost by one on the road at Iowa, which is not an easy place to play. That's how close they were from playoff, national championship contention, all of that stuff. Instead, it's another 10-win season probably this year for Michigan that people view as a disappointment. That's where it is, at least on the outside. And on the inside, Michigan is probably very disappointed because they're paying that man too much money for this level of production. But they're a little bit more reasonable over there when it comes to their college football. They don't expect to win national championships every year, in large part because Michigan, as if I'm not mistaken, since integration was widespread in college football, that Michigan has won all of one national championship. That's not how this works at Alabama. That's not the game that they are playing at Alabama. It ain't been that way. It won't be that way. And by the way, here it is for you, Gabe. Since 1950, Michigan has won half a national championship. 97, the year that Charles Woodson won the Heisman. They split a national championship that year. Otherwise, they hadn't won a national championship since 1948. Like, they're playing a different game, man. They are playing a different game. Harbaugh is one of theirs. Harbaugh is a Schembechler guy because part of what Michigan wanted, to move into the future while still having their ties to Schembechler. Harbaugh was basically the only way that they were going to be able to do that. That's what it turned into. Okay, cool. They want better, but they're going to live with what it is that they got. Now, if he don't beat Ohio State no time soon, it's going to be an issue. But think about this. When John Cooper was coaching at Ohio State, his record against Michigan was 2-10-1. 2-10-1, and he got to keep the job for 13 years. That ain't happening at Alabama. You can know this right now. That ain't happening at Alabama. I tell people the Bill Curry story all the time. 1989, Alabama was 10-0 going into the game at Auburn. There was no chance that they were going to win the game at Auburn. And the reason there was no chance they were going to win the game at Auburn was that was the first time they had played the game on campus at Auburn. Ever. There was no way in the world any Alabama team was going to show up. The Dolphins could have showed up. They wasn't going to, no, there was no way that they were going to win that game. Period. But he lost that one. Then they went to the Sugar Bowl and lost to Miami. A Miami team, by the way, that won the national championship that year. Bill Curry was not the coach in 1990. He had already had a brick thrown through his windshield. Already a brick through his windshield. They different over there, man. They are different over there. And so with Saban, hey, man, if Saban popped up in a year or two and was like, yo, I don't want to do this no more, wouldn't shock me in the least. Because if they don't win the SEC next year, or please don't mess around and do something like win the SEC but not be able to get to the playoff, they may not run Saban out of there, but Saban may run himself. Because that's the other thing about Alabama. They ain't even necessarily got to fire you. These dudes fire themselves. Ray Perkins fired himself at a top 15 season, finally got the thing back rolling, fired himself to go coach the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who at the time stunk. Bill Curry technically fired himself. Gene Stallings, he had won a national championship, wound up firing himself. That's what they do, man. It's a rough one. It's a tough go. But I got to say, it's kind of entertaining to watch from over here. This is the deal that you make. And for Saban, it was a perfect fit because they demanded what he demands of himself. And if he don't do what he demands of himself, don't you worry. They're going to demand he get up out of Dodge. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about Josh Shaw, the dumbest gambler in the world. But first, let me tell you about something I look forward to every month. That's my shipment from ButcherBox. For all of you existing ButcherBox members and those who are signing up today, I highly recommend you check out the pork chops and the steaks. I like to put them on the grill. It's a little cold, but I can still go up there. It's worth it for you. Let me know what you think. Post your picture of my recommendation to your social media and tag me and ButcherBox and tell us how you prepared it. And for those of you on the fence, ButcherBox delivers 100% grass-fed, organic, and free-range meat with no antibiotics or hormones ever, shipped right to your door. For free shipping, ButcherBox, the most convenient way to get meat the way it's meant to be, natural, fresh, and delicious. And to make things better, ButcherBox is offering new members $20 off your first box plus 2 pounds of ground beef and 2 packs of bacon when you sign up at ButcherBox.com/Bomani. That's ButcherBox.com/Bomani for $20 off your first box plus 2 pounds of ground beef and 2 packs of bacon free in your first box. ButcherBox.com/Bomani. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I want to take a moment to introduce you to a gentleman named Josh Shaw. Gabe, are you familiar with Josh Shaw?
I am. This is Josh Shaw, formerly of USC.
Yes.
So I'm very familiar.
Yes, yes. And for people who do not remember the story, Gabe, you double-checked this on me, but I'm pretty sure that this is how it went. So Josh Shaw had this situation where he had busted up his ankle. And he goes down to USC with his busted up ankle. And they're like, yo, what's going on with your busted up ankle? And he tells him, hey, man, my sister was in the pool and I thought she was drowning. And so I just jumped off a balcony into the pool to go save her. And in the course of doing that, I busted up my ankle. That's what he told USC. This is what, about 4 or 5 years ago? 2014. And so he tells USC this. You know, he needed to give them an explanation for why he had this busted up ankle. And then folks at USC are like, wow, what an amazing story. You're a hero. You know what the place is for heroes? The morning talk shows. As I remember, it was the Today Show or one of those, but they came down and they did a whole thing on Josh Shaw, the hero, the man who had jumped off the balcony to go save his little sister.
His nephew. Nephew. Actually,
it was, yeah. Right. It was some kinfolk, right? So he jumps down to save his nephew. What an amazing story. That subsequently started unraveling because it wasn't really true, because what had really happened was Josh Shaw was up in an apartment with some tenderoni and some dude showed up and he panicked and he did the only thing he could think to do, which was to go Omar Little and jump out the window, at which point he busted up his ankle. I got that part right.
You did. Shaw says fear kept him from coming clean as he thought, I was in way too deep.
Yo, and so the thing is, I always cut him some slack on that, right? Because what he did was, he told a ridiculous lie, right? Like he had to get in and explain to the coaches what had happened. And he didn't know enough to know that if he had walked in and he had told the coaches, yo, man, so, you know, I was up there with this girl, you know what I'm saying? Right, man, next thing I know, somebody busts up in the crib. I ain't know she had a, how's that? She didn't tell me. Look, I just had to jump out the window. It was the only thing I could do. It was the only way out. Like, Gabe, I feel like his coaches would have been like, yeah, dog, I understand. I feel you. Or at the very least, they would have been one coach that felt that way, right? Because, I mean, I ain't gonna lie. I hear that, and I'm like, yeah, I get it.
The cover-up is so much worse than the crime.
Yeah.
Lots of times.
Oh, Steve Sarkisian was the coach at USC at that point, right? Yeah, that was after Kiffin left. Something tells me, and I could be wrong here, but something tells me that Steve Sarkisian might know a little something about needing to cover some tracks. Not necessarily the same kinds of tracks, but tracks in general. I think he would have understood, like, okay, yeah, man, he just had to get out of that situation. But sometimes when you're young, you don't understand, like, when you're young, you don't understand what it is that you do and do not need to lie about. Like, for example, I got a homeboy, right? He's a manager in this office. And there was something that they needed done at that office that required somebody to be, to pass a drug test. And so he went and told the dude, he's like, hey, man, I'm going to need you to take a drug test next week. And the dude took the drug test the next week, and then he failed the drug test. And my boy was furious. And he was like, if he had just told me that he could not pass the drug test, we'd have done it on another day. Like, he wanted him to pass this drug test. He was rooting for him to pass this drug test. He tried to give him the answers to the test. Right? Like, he told him that the pop quiz was coming, but the man didn't have it in him, and I understand why he didn't, but he didn't have it in him to be like, hey, man, I ain't going to be able to pass no drug test no time soon, right? Because he was thinking he's going to get fired, as opposed to the answer was going to be, okay, cool, so when you think you're going to be able to do that? That was the direction that whole situation was going in, right? But that dude thought that was a time he needed to lie, and he didn't realize that that was a time that he needed to come clean. Hey, Gabe, you want to torture the people? You want to torture the people with the elevator music?
Let it play.
I have been told a story that at some point.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
Right. Right. He didn't know that was a time to tell the truth. It's hard to gauge those things, but that was a time to tell the truth. He did not realize that that was a time to tell the truth. Right. He just didn't know. And that's what happened to Josh Shaw in that situation. And so USC, they hear this story and they're like, yo, a chance to get great PR. Let's get the Today Show down here, baby. And now you, Josh Shaw, you got to keep this lie up. Right? Because before, the lie was pretty inconsequential. Now the lie can get you in trouble. And now you got to ride the lie out. And people investigated it. And then they found out that, yeah, he was just trying to break free. And then everybody's so disappointed because he lied to him. And I didn't blame people for being disappointed that he lied to him. But the lie that he told on the front end, there was no way for him to expect that this lie was going to mushroom into a national human interest story. And then once it got there, he just rode it as long as he could. Okay? So that is Josh Shaw. Would you like to hear something new about Josh Shaw? Josh Shaw, he's hurt, or they got him on the hurt list. I don't know how hurt he actually is, but he was signed to play with the Arizona Cardinals, but he wasn't playing, again, because he was hurt. So he went to Vegas over the weekend with some people. Not this weekend, but a weekend. Goes to Vegas over a weekend with some people, and he decides to gamble on sports. Really, really bad idea. It was found that he gambled on sports. As a result, Josh Shaw is suspended for the rest of this season on the basis of this, because now that we're in this new world order about gambling, you know, the league's got to hold it down on this, right? Can't even blame him on that. Like, this is something that you can't have. Integrity of the game really, really does matter. Now, there's no indication that he used any inside information. He put his own team in a parlay and bet against them. And by the way, his team won. I mean, lost the game, but he lost the bet because he ain't cover. So he out of here on the basis of going in there gambling on sports. Really, really stupid thing of him to do. Like, he didn't do it through no bookie. Again, he did it at the casino. At the casino. Gabe, do you know how he got caught?
I do, and it's my favorite part of the story.
Tell the people how he got caught.
So, Shaw was open about his line of work when filling out his application for a betting account with Caesars, even listing, quote, professional football player as his occupation, sources said.
Right.
Wow.
Right. That is what he did. Now, the story that he has given has been that after the Supreme Court ruling, that he thought that he could gamble now, right? Like, the issue with the gambling for you is not the fact that it's illegal, it's the fact that you're involved in it. You know, like, it's legal to buy and sell stocks, but not if you have inside information. Okay? You see what I mean? Like, just because they say trading is legal doesn't mean it's legal for you. That was where he wound up in this one, and he put it on his application that he was a professional football player. He listed it right there. Now, I feel like if you're Caesars, as soon as you see his occupation is professional football player, the first thing you got to do is call your manager. And the first thing your manager is going to do, he's going to call NFL security. Right? Like, if you out here trying to run some shenanigans, the casino is more invested in fair play than anybody else is. Right? So anything that might be shenanigans, then they're going to have to make the calls. There's just no way around it. That's what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to make the calls. And so I'm sure the second he walked in and they ran that, they were like, yeah, if he makes a bet, it's on. And he made a bet, and they sent the word across, and then this dude got shut down. The moral of the story as it relates to this dude is he had no idea when to lie and when to tell the truth. We laid out for you the 2014 situation. That was a time to tell the truth, but he wasn't mature enough to tell the truth, and I understand it, and so he lied. In the gambling situation, that would have been a time to lie. Instead, he told the truth. And now he's out of work for a year and change. Gabe, is he the dumbest gambler ever?
Or at least just the most unaware of what he's actually doing.
Yeah, this wasn't wise, man. This was a bad play. And like I say, I feel bad for him. One thing, by the way, before we go, I do want to mention this. I don't know if you remember reading any of the quotes from his mama in 2014. Mamas are different than just about everybody else, because his mama was riding that lie to the bitter end. The bitter end, I tell you. At no point was that woman like, yeah, you know, I wish he would have told the truth. Nope, she was just like, hey, I'm just glad my baby saved my grandbaby's life. That was it. She was in. Once your mama's in with you, she ain't backing out. She gonna ride this thing all the way to the end. All the way to the end. That's why that boy should have put down on that application that he was a poet and then called his mama up. And mama be like, my boy ain't never played no, I ain't never seen him play no football. In fact, I don't allow my children to play football. It's violent.
He probably should have just asked his mama before he did this one.
Yeah, yeah, fair, fair. Bad play. Bad play. And he went down. Bad combination. People with bad judgment telling a little bit too much truth. All right, Gabe, you seen this report about how the NBA's ratings are down?
I have.
Ethan Strauss of The Athletic wrote something about this months ago, and he made a point before anybody got to it, which was the losses are not accounted for simply by, like, streaming and piracy and stuff like that. Like, they are having a viewership issue right now in the NBA. This confounds me just a little bit. All right. Now, I do think that this year in the NBA is interesting because a lot of the teams that would have been national television draws are not what they were expected to be when you put them on the calendar. So we got a lot of these Pelicans games that have been national television draws for Zion Williamson. Zion Williamson is not playing. You have the Warriors in some of these spaces. I don't know who any of the Warriors are. They could put out the Warriors from the movie. And I'm not really sure I could tell you a difference between them and the cast that the Warriors got out here playing in the NBA. Like me, myself, personally. I don't know if I could do that for you, right? And I've said this before about basketball, and this is important, is that we'll watch just about anybody play football. Who we watch play basketball is much more dependent on particular circumstances, dependent upon the team, dependent upon who the stars are, who is and is not playing. Like, those things matter differently in basketball than they do anywhere else. And so maybe that's a part of what's going on here with the NBA, this idea that, oh, man, well, the season's just too long. I guess you can say that, but is that affecting the ratings in hockey? Because hockey has a season that's about the same length. Are we having that same discussion with baseball, where not only is the season longer, but baseball is the only sport where you could reasonably expect that you come out and a fifth stringer is going to be one of the most important players in the game, the number five starter? I don't see that discussion going on over there in the same way. Like, the NBA always has to deal with a different level of criticism from people, in part because so much of the criticism about the NBA is typically code words for race. Now, am I saying that race is playing a role in these ratings? No, I don't have an answer for what exactly is going on in the drop in ratings. If I had to point to stuff, it would be the things that I mentioned just a little bit earlier. That would be the direction that I would go in off the top. But I don't know truly what to make of the fact that we're saying that ratings in the NBA are falling in an era where we have more star power in the NBA than we've ever had. We have a deeper pool of players in the NBA than we've ever had, right? Like, the number of really, really, really good players in the NBA is so much higher than it has ever been. There's so much talent everywhere. There is, to me, a compelling angle on just about every single team in the NBA. Like, let me pull up a list of the NBA teams right now in front of me, and I will really tell you, like, every team that I think has a compelling angle. Or, Gabe, you could try this one. Name a team that you think you could say, well, there's nothing really that interesting about them, and I'll see what I can get you.
Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, I was about to say. I was hoping you weren't going to do that. How about
the Orlando Magic?
You know, it's interesting about the Magic because they frequently come up on this list when people bring this up, but they have some really interesting young players on the team, and they made the playoffs last year. So I don't necessarily expect, like, a stranger to care about the Magic, but if the Magic are on, it doesn't mean it's a bad game.
How about the Washington Wizards?
So the Wizards are actually incredible to watch this year because it's kind of like watching the old Loyola Marymount teams. The Wizards, I think, are the second best offensive team in the league and literally one of the worst defensive teams in the history of the NBA. Like, you want to see some up and down basketball, you can watch the Washington Wizards.
I mean, even just banding around the different teams around the league, like, say, if you're going to bring up Phoenix, they've actually been kind of interesting this year. If you bring up, like, Minnesota, they've got Karl Anthony Towns.
And a resurgent Andrew Wiggins. Not even resurgent, a surgeon Andrew Wiggins. He ain't never been this good.
Yeah.
The Grizzlies have Ja Morant. The Spurs are the Spurs. And so, you know, that's tricky.
Boring,
you know, but Portland, especially now that everybody loves Melo, they got a lot that's going on there. The Thunder got a lot of good young players. There's a lot going on. And then we start talking about the top of the league. Like, we're talking about there at the bottom. When you start talking about the top of the league, I'm down to watch just about every team that's up here doing something in the NBA right now. And so it's wild to me the idea that the ratings are down. Now, another thing that I think probably has something to do with it, they're starting this season earlier and earlier, and people just aren't ready for basketball yet. And I know that part of why they got to start the season early in the ways that they have is because they want to, like, lighten the load on players, cut down on back-to-backs and everything else. But people aren't really, like, warmed up for this. And then we get to the stuff like the load management issue. And I do think that load management will have an effect on ratings, again, because who watches a basketball game is very dependent upon who plays in that game, right? Like, that part really does matter. So the idea that, guys, you could turn on a game and all of a sudden the dudes aren't in it, yeah, that's going to mess up the money. That's going to mess up the viewership. I think all of that is 100% correct. My question would be this, though, for the NBA. Aside from saying, hey, Kawhi Leonard, we need you to get a little closer to 82 games, how do you correct the ratings? Because one thing I wonder about here is whether or not they've gone too far in incentivizing offense. Because, I mean, as much as we could talk about these guys and these numbers they're putting up in the triple-doubles, and by the way, this has been in a pattern for years now. It's been building to this point. It's too easy to score. Like, I personally, I'm down to watch a game in the 110s, the 120s, man. I don't really want to watch games in the 150s. And it's not that these, and largely because we're not seeing these games get into the 150s because we're watching people do incredible things. We're watching these games get into the 150s because people are shooting threes and free throws. Like, these are the things that are driving up the scores in these games. And I'm questioning, is this type of basketball a product that the fans want, right? Like, is this type of product really something that people want to watch? And I mean, what we don't want is what we had in the 90s. I think that we'd all agree. If you go back and watch that basketball, we don't want that. What that basketball had was a lot more isolation, which thereby necessitated them to allow for a lot more physical play. Because that was the only way, if everybody's going to be out in isolation, that was the only way you can guard anybody was by muscling them. That was it. You are not going to guard an NBA player in isolation unless you get to really, really go hard physically. That's the only way you're going to be able to do it. We don't want that game necessarily, but they changed the rules to incentivize ball movement more because ball movement was seen as being more aesthetically pleasing, and I think that there's something to that. But as people have gotten hip to the math and the three has become what it is, this game would be a lot more entertaining if they could find a way to widen the court and move the three-point line back. And we know why they don't want to widen the court, because it would cost people money on those tickets down low. That's fine. But they got to widen the court and they got to move the three-point line back, because I just don't think that this brand of basketball is one that people are going to fall in love with in the way that a lot of us fell in love with it. Like, to me, NBA basketball is the most, I'd say there is nothing that is simultaneously as beautiful and as athletic. right? It combines so many different things and so many different elements that make it so compelling for me to watch. And it's like the thing that I look up and be like, damn, I really wish I could do that. You know, like I really, really wish that that was something that I could do. Like that's what I see when I watch professional basketball. That's the kind of thing that I am in it for. I like seeing people do individually great things. Like that's one thing about Melo that is interesting is that Melo was such a throwback in the sense that there are lots of complaints to be made about Melo and the way that he affects a basketball team. But there's also a great value as a viewer just watching Melo and ISO on somebody and just go to work. Like you love that. It was much more fun watching that than watching James Harden in ISO, though, which is an interesting thing to kind of consider. But there's something to be said for watching somebody do incredible individual things. And the game as it stands right now doesn't really encourage that. In fact, the rules are set for a lot of the opposite. And I'm not sure if that's really the thing that people want to watch. I also raise this question, like not to sound all NASCAR-y about it, but, you know, if we can get a little more fighting out here, it'll probably be a little better. And I don't even necessarily mean fighting in the sense that they need to be out here throwing punches as much as the hard foul has been eradicated from basketball. You telling me it wouldn't be better to have a hard foul here and there? Like the hard foul is what's up. Scare people about coming to the rack, right? This makes things better. This makes things more interesting. This makes things more fun. Just like I understand for player safety purposes why it is that we basically eliminated the hard hitting safety from the NFL. I totally get it, but tell me it wasn't more fun when safeties is out here knocking people's teeth out. It was. It was better. And so as the NBA has become more optimized toward analytics, is that necessarily making a game that's more fun for people to watch? I think that's a question that the NBA needs to ask itself because they got everything in place. Everything in place right now. All of it is right there. Why aren't people watching it? And hey, they can't even use the excuse that they used to use that the players are a bunch of thugs. Like you could try that one before. You can't even try it now. In fact, like Gabe, do you feel like, because you're about 10 years younger than me, do you feel like you've grown up in an era where the idea that the players are thugs has been prevalent?
I mean, you saw it a little bit with Iverson.
Yes.
Right? That was the early 2000s.
Yeah, but even that now, we're talking about almost 20 years ago.
Yeah. So for me, like growing up, yes, but that's like pretty far back in the memory.
But that was like the dominant theme when people talked about the NBA for decades, from the 70s and 80s and people talking about cocaine into the 90s and even with in the presence of Jordan. And then in the 2000s, the early 2000s, which was kind of the wild, wild west in the NBA. Like, ooh, there's a lot going on there. But that was the thing. You don't hear that about the NBA anymore. You only hear that about the NBA when the NHL needs to compare itself to something.
You know what's nuts about that, too, is with David Stern and changing the pregame wardrobe.
Yep.
The suited and booted.
Yep.
Before the games, and now people are getting to wear whatever they want.
Yep.
And I would imagine there's so many people that don't even remember that switch.
Exactly. Like, that was the concern at the time about the NBA. They're not even fighting against that anymore. Like, it's the NFL that's had that fight more recently than the NBA does. The NBA is not even having to deal with what has been the most major thing that is dealt with, which is that specter of race in that way. In that way. We're not dealing with that. So is it the product or is it the people? And if it's the people, what is it about the people? Like, I just can't understand how everything in the NBA is going right, except the most important metric of success in the NBA is going wrong. That is strange. All right, we'll be back in a minute with If You Haven't Heard, but first, hiring is challenging. But there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, and growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Codable co-founder Gretchen Huebner experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a new game artist to grow with her education tech company. But then she switched to ZipRecruiter and saw an immediate difference, and you can too by signing up for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. And by using ZipRecruiter screening questions to filter candidates, Gretchen found it easier to focus on the best ones, then find the right one. In fact, after posting her job on ZipRecruiter, Gretchen said she was honestly surprised she found qualified applicants so quickly and hired a new game artist in less than 2 weeks. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. ZY ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from the automotive industry.
Chris Woodyard, USA Today. Ever ride in a Tesla? About the only sound is the rubber tires against the road and maybe a little wind noise. Now some other automakers are deciding they need to do more to add sound to the interior of the car to give drivers more of a natural car feel. But they're taking different approaches. In the new Taycan, Porsche tries to give it no sound except for the natural sounds of the electric motor. So they have some microphones back there. They pipe the sound into the cabin. It's just what's going on in the engine. BMW, in several of its electric models, is going a whole different route. They have brought on German composer, movie composer, Hans Zimmer, to help come up with really interesting electronic sounds that they feel will give the car a more high-tech feeling. And then there's Ford. They've just created a electric SUV, their version of the Mustang, and it will have sounds that are supposed to sound like the Mustang Coupe, the famous 1965 Mustang. All the generations since, this new electric SUV will have sounds in the background that sound a little bit like a Mustang. We've been in it. It's kind of cool. It's very subtle, doesn't overwhelm you, and it's a new approach to try to get more sound in the cabin of an electric car.
All right. So, okay, let me get this straight. So a big part of this is that people can't hear their cars when they inside their cars. Therefore, they want to hear more noise so that they feel like they have a stronger car.
That is correct.
That's interesting. So, have I told you about when I got the car?
No, you didn't.
Okay. So, when I was in Miami, you know, I did okay for myself. And so, I finally decided, I come in a little money, I'm going to get a car. A car, you know what I mean? So I got me a 2015 BMW M4. Are you familiar with the M4?
I am.
I wish you could see the smile on my face right now. And I just love the way that thing sounded, boy. It just had this noise, man. It was amazing. I once took my mama on some back roads because she was like, when are you going to bring the car home? Like, I've learned my mama likes cars. She's like, when are you going to bring the car home? When are you going to bring the car home? So I brought the car home and I did like car commercial stuff, you know, them winding back roads with nobody on them, where they tell you don't try this at home, professional stuntman involved. I did that. I mean, I'm going like 75, 80 on them back roads, speed limit 35 with my mama in the car. And she loved every minute of it because it was so much control. We was never unsafe. It was amazing. And I just remember that noise, boy, when that thing would come, I understood it, which means I also understand why these people want their thing to make a little bit more noise. I totally get it.
Ferocious and palatable, which is like, that's next level right there.
I have to say, I totally get it. I love it. Now I don't have a car. I had to give it away. That's the last thing I did before I left Miami. Gave, dropped a car off, caught an Uber to the airport.
That was a smart decision moving to New York, I think. All right, our next story comes from tech.
My name is Peter Holly, and I'm a reporter covering technology at the Washington Post. My latest story is about a new army of robot dogs. They're being created by a company called Boston Dynamics, and if you've been on YouTube in the last year, you've probably seen their videos. The company's robotic dog model is known as Spot. It travels on four legs at about 3 miles an hour, and it weighs around 70 pounds. That might not sound very intimidating, but these dogs have been able to open doors, travel up and down stairs, and collectively have even pulled a massive truck. Now, we've known for several months that Boston Dynamics has been leasing out these robots to various companies, mostly in construction. What we didn't know was that Boston Dynamics has also been leasing its dogs to the Massachusetts State Police, and they've already been involved in operations. Police use of the robotic dogs was revealed by the ACLU, which requested records showing that the dogs were in operation. We don't know exactly how the dogs are being used, but we do know that they're being used by the state police's bomb squad, which makes sense because they've been using robots for years. The state police say this time is no different, government, but that hasn't stopped privacy advocates from raising alarms. The ACLU is demanding far more transparency from police and demanding that they tell the public how they're using their robots. You can't help but wonder if some of the pushback is related to Boston Dynamics. They put out some of the most compelling, shocking, and even terrifying videos of their hyper-futuristic robots in recent years. It's one thing to see Spot working with police. It would be quite another thing to see Atlas. Atlas is Boston Dynamics' athletic humanoid robot. He can already do backflips and parkour, and if that wasn't frightening enough, he's also learning to sprint.
Look, man, I ain't gonna lie to you. I heard about these robot dogs, and they was talking about MV Peter right there was just talking about his concern, you know, people's concerns about privacy with the robot dogs. I was thinking about those dogs being used for totally different reasons. They talk about robot dogs, like bomb sniffing dogs and everything else. And maybe this is just a product of my like scope and awareness and where I come from, you know, but gay, I was worried about them dogs coming and biting people. when I think of police dogs, my first thought is not of the bomb sniffing dog. My first thought is them German shepherds. Look here, if they turn the robot dogs on us, do we have any chance whatsoever in that fight?
Have you seen the videos of these dogs? They don't have like teeth and stuff like that, which is actually kind of like misleading, because when you think of a robot dog, you think of something that would be in like Terminator or one of those robot dogs.
The dogs they showed you don't have teeth. You are crazy if you think that the robot dog with teeth is not in production. Oh, no. There's a whole scope of problems that apparently y'all ain't took a moment to think about. Maybe it's because I'm reading these books right now about this civil rights era, but oh, no, robot dogs, that's the scariest thing I've ever heard.
All right, Bo, so this last story is a global news story, and we are getting it from a ABC News and Global report. From ABC's James Longman.
This morning, London reeling from a terror attack in the heart of the city, but celebrating the heroes who brought the suspect down. At around 2 p.m, police were called to reports of multiple stabbings at London Bridge, but passers-by had already intercepted the knife-wielding man. Their bravery even more extraordinary, as he seems to be wearing a suicide vest, later revealed to be a fake. One of those stepping in, describing the ordeal to ITV News.
He was wielding two knives. One was sort of duct taped to his hand. Tried to stamp as hard as I could on his wrist, trying, you know, release the knife.
A police officer on the scene, pulling people off and moving back, they opened fire. Enrique Fernandez tells me of the panic inside one cafe.
I just thought he could be the next major terrorist attack.
Were you scared?
Yeah, petrified. I've never been so scared in my life.
Windows, go, go!
Customers rushing down the stairs into the basement to hide. Authorities have yet to establish a motive, but ABC understands the man was a convicted terrorist, recently released from prison, and had known links to terror groups.
They took that dude down. What is that thing called?
Well, there was a narwhal tusk.
That's what I'm talking about. One dude had a fire extinguisher, and how you say that?
That was a narwhal tusk.
Narwhal. A narwhal tusk. And it was a Polish dude, and he just had it in the trunk of his car. And when the moment came, he was like, yo, I got that tusk. Like, is that the purpose for the tusk? Was he transporting the tusk somewhere? Is he always, just in case something jumps off, I got my handy tusk?
That's what I'm a little unclear on, but I would imagine that he would be transporting it somewhere and not just having it, you know, on standby.
I mean, clearly it comes in handy. Like, I had to give some, like, the dude with the fire extinguisher. I mean, that dude, you want to talk about showing up with a gun that ain't got nothing but blanks in it, right? Like he showed up with the fire extinguisher. I'm not saying that he didn't help. I'm just saying that is an incredibly brave man, that all he had to work with was the fire extinguisher, and he was just in there to do it anyway. Like, yo, you bought it. This other dude, though, he a Boy Scout. I mean, he was ready. I mean, that thing was long too. Like, that's kind of hard to wield. You're not out the game because this dude got this tusk. But I feel like you turn around and you see that, and it's going to take you a minute to like gather yourself. Like, wait a minute, what? And then right then it's too late. You understand what I'm saying? Like, right then it's just like, oh wow, no, man, my bad. I had the moment and it was gone. You just wind up getting shot. And this is why me and my brother have talked about this. Did you know nunchucks are illegal to carry?
I did know that.
Yes, they're illegal to carry. And I looked this up, and apparently they became illegal to carry in New York City because there was a rash of nunchuckins. that street gangs were carrying nunchucks. And I find it hard to believe that that many people had nunchucks at the time, right? Like, I feel like that's one of those things where a couple people get caught with some nunchucks and all of a sudden nunchucks are everywhere and now nunchucks are banned. Got it. But have you ever thought about how much it must hurt to get hit with some nunchucks? Because when you think about it, in them kung fu movies, normally when people got the nunchucks, they just kind of showing off all their nunchuck tricks. But you don't really see nunchucks used that much as an offensive implement. Imagine getting hit in the mouth with some nunchucks. That would hurt, right?
Unbelievably bad.
Right. But here's the thing. Like, imagine that you out somewhere and some dude comes up behind you and is like, yo, give me your money. And then you turn around and all he got in his hand is some nunchucks. Like, are you really going to be scared?
I would be terrified.
Are you sure in that moment? Because I feel like I would be expecting a gun and then all it is nunchucks. I'm like, wait, nunchucks? And then, wow, three teeth. Just that fast. But I feel like I'd blink. Like, I see the nunchucks. I'm like, wait a minute, nunchucks? Are you serious? I think I can, bloop. Nope. Then he like caught you in the grill, right? It's over for you at that moment with the nunchucks because you were surprised and you were probably underestimating what the nunchucks could provide.
Yeah, the amount of time it would take you to figure out, oh, he's got nunchucks. What's my next move?
Yes.
You'd be down on the ground.
Yeah, man. But nunchucks, man, that's a powerful, powerful tool. And I guess I'm saying, buddy could have had nunchucks in the car because he'd have walked up on you with them nunchucks. He'd have been like, your knife. You're like, wait a minute. Are those some broop? Next thing you know, you come out there looking like you got the chicken pox.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. Did you have a nice Thanksgiving? We're just coming off of the back of the little break we had.
I did indeed.
Yes, well, we put out for the people's best Thanksgiving stories, past and present. Got a couple of good ones. Our first comes from Pete in Grosse Pointe.
20 years ago, 1999, I was a freshman in college and came home for Thanksgiving. Wasn't that far in Ann Arbor. And my mom told me that something big was going to happen. And I, you know, it's my mom, so I don't care. My mom thinks anything that's out of the ordinary is big. And it turned out that my dad's brother, his once closest to him, had a son that no one knew about. And I was just about to turn 19. And this guy was, like, my cousin was 27. And he came to Thanksgiving dinner like it was nothing. Like, he brought his wife and his two daughters and, like, I didn't know who he was, and I'm like, who is this? And my mom said, this is the big thing. This is your cousin, and, you know, this is his wife and his two daughters. And it was just like, oh, okay. And then my uncle's wife, my auntie, she was so mad because no one ever told her what was going to happen. They just sort of, like, did this big, like, Maury reveal, and it was crazy. And, like, even to this day, this past Thanksgiving, I still mentioned it to my mom, and my mom was like, yeah, we really didn't think that one through.
Yeah, we really didn't think that one through.
One would imagine if it was a big reveal and something that was a big deal in general, that is exactly what you would do. You would think it through.
Yeah, like, you'd think all of it. None of it? None? Yikes.
And to think that you're rolling it out and this was going to be some big surprise and just acting like it was no big deal.
Yeah, like, whoa, what do you mean?
Yeah, here's your new family.
Parents are good for stuff like that, though. They be crossing their fingers and just hoping for the best.
Our next comes from Graham in Colorado.
This Thanksgiving story happened a while back. I think I was probably, like, I don't know, 10 or 11. My family met up with my cousins in Santa Fe. And I don't remember the situation, but I showed up late. And the rest of the family that was already there decided that they would take a spa day and unknowingly ended up at a very nude spa. And my cousins were probably, I mean, the oldest was probably like 15, so they certainly weren't mature enough to deal with that situation properly. So the majority of the weekend was spent talking about all of the things that they had seen. And per usual with those things, it's never the people you want to see. So that was a particularly uncomfortable Thanksgiving.
Yo, damn. Okay.
A nude spa. It's not really the type of place you go for a family occasion.
You telling me nobody knew before they got there?
That's what he's describing.
Nobody knew. That wasn't nowhere on the paperwork.
But with spas, I would imagine that. I mean, that kind of comes with the territory sometimes.
Yeah,
right?
But like, yeah, that's a good question. Like, how naked are we talking? Like, did they just not have robes? Like, that wasn't an option?
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're familiar with the gym situation at all, if you're going in the locker room, you got these old men, they thinking it's a spa in there.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh, sounds like a lot.
All right, this last one, the guy didn't leave his name, but I thought the story was pretty good.
4 years ago, I first met my now fiance's family, and we started dating for a few months. Kicked it during the summer, started dating that August. So Thanksgiving, I decided to, you know, we're going to finally meet the family before I make my way back home to Wisconsin for my 10-year high school reunion. So we get there, a nice place, the welcoming home. I go in there, and we sit at the kitchen table, and I'm like, what is that smell? So we sit there trying to figure out, I look at the bottom of my shoe. I guess I stepped on some cat doo-doo outside, just fresh cat doo-doo. So I'm just sitting at the kitchen table, already embarrassed now, because I'm thinking like, yo, why do I, is this meat really stinking? Instead of our family, you know, meeting for the first time. So that's not even the kicker, you know, clean the shoe, whatever. So we had dinner, we was able to eat. And afterwards, you know, I just wanted to express my thank you, love, and appreciation for welcome, you know, letting me, you know, hang out and things like that. And in the moment, as I was talking, I see everyone at the table start pulling out their phones and start recording. And I'm looking around, and one of her sisters said, are you proposing? My face lit up, and it was just, I backed up like, oh no, you know. So, you know, now we are officially engaged now 4 years later, but it was crazy. It was so crazy. And I will never forget that day. Like, you know, going to a small town in Texas, you know, and I DJ, so I'm not used to, you know, going to small towns, but man, this, that moment right there changed the whole game for me. And so, yeah, man, that was just a crazy Thanksgiving, man. I appreciate it. Can't wait to hear the response. I'll let you boy.
I gotta say, Gabe, I thought that story was going to end a lot worse.
Well, I thought my favorite part of the story was he was like, yeah, I'm a DJ, so I don't go to very many small towns. Do we got a star on our hands, or what do we got? I don't go to very many small towns in Texas. Well, I don't either.
Yo, I thought that was going to go so much worse.
Gosh.
They only thought you were going to propose, and they seemed happy about it.
Yeah.
I admit I'm making some assumptions about who all's there.
And what are those assumptions?
Where did he say it was?
Texas.
Texas could go either way, but still. Yo, dang. That's a lot. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We try to do this thing here a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our sponsors, ButcherBox and ZipRecruiter. Thank you to our, if you haven't heard, contributors. Thanks to Chris Woodyard of USA Today. Check out his story on electric vehicles and how some people think they are too quiet at usatoday.com. Thanks to MV Peter Holly of the Washington Post. Check out the Innovations blog. That's where you can find him. And also check out his story on the robot dogs that are being put to work by the police. And thank you to ABC News. Also, be sure to check out the Mina Kime show featuring Lenny, her dog. This week, Mina chats with Charles McDonald of the New York Daily News about the Ravens' win over the 49ers. They also preview Week 14. Download and subscribe to the Mina Kime Show. Also, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a few days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.